Okay, today's daf is Samach Bet. We're going to start at the bottom. We're at the top of Samach Bet and Aleph. We're up to Bishlama. Okay, it's about the eighth line. Bishlama bayit min kirat surato. Elam is beach mina yade. So, I just have to remember what the issue is here. We know where the bayit. In other words, they knew when they got back to the bayit Cheney. When you go to a remains of someplace, what is usually left? The walls, right? The outlines of the walls. So they understood where the bayit was supposed to be, but they didn't know where the mizbeach was supposed to be. Amar Rabbi Elazar. So now we're going to have an interesting machloket. You can, in my mind, this is a conceptual machloket. Think about your own ideas. I started in a direction, but maybe you could take it farther. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Ra'u mizbeach banoi Michael hasar gadol umeid makriv alav. Okay, this is classic Ruach HaKodesh. They saw Michael, the angel, doing sacrifices. There's always this concept that there's a Beit HaMikdash Shalmala, Keneged, the Beit HaMikdash Shalmata, and they saw this image, Ruach HaKodesh. Okay, so we would call this the divine answer, right? They had divine inspiration. They told them exactly where it was, coming from God. Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha Amar, Afrosh Yitzchak Ra'u, Shemunach Bo Tomakom. They found the ashes of Yitzchak. Okay, from the Akedah, right? Not of Yitzchak, but of the isle that they sacrificed. So that I would call the historical answer, right? In other words, this place, right? They saw exactly where the Mizbeach was from the Akedah, and this is connecting it back to historically an event that took place, right? And a central, we would call it a very central event in Jewish history. Rabbi Shmuel, okay, note, by the way, the first two are something they see. Now, you might say they're not the same seeing, because one is seeing Baruch HaKodesh, and one is actually seeing, although I don't know that they actually saw the ashes, but okay.
There have been an awful lot of ashes in that place in between.
Yes. It's obviously, this is not an actual thing that happened. This is.
But it might also have been a Ruach HaKodesh kind of scene, because there were lots of.
Yes, it's also sort of Ruach HaKodesh, but it's different, because. You know, one is
here and up there.
Right, exactly. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani amar, Mikol habayit kulo herichu reach ktoret, Misham herichu reach evarim. First of all, it gives you a nice image of the Beit HaMikdash that you can imagine the smells of the Beit HaMikdash were very potent, right? You have the ktoret going all the time, you have the smell of the ktoret, and then you have the reach of the evarim of what's burning. So he says, basically, they smelled all the ketoret everywhere, and in that one spot, they smelled the burning of meat. So that made them realize this is where it is. Okay, so let's just go back. We have three reasons as to how they knew exactly where the Mizbeach was supposed to be. Either Ruach HaKodesh showed them an image of an angel sacrificing, or the historical answer of Yitzchak, they found the ashes from the Akedah, or they... And then I struggled with exactly how to classify it, but it was more of the two last ones are actions of the people as opposed to actions of God, as they saw, but not something that happened in history, you know, a long time ago, but history relate, you know, they saw what it actually, or they didn't actually see in this case, they smelled, they intuited from the smells where the people had last done it, and therefore they were able to figure out where to do. Anyway, I think it's an interesting source that you could do a lot with, but I didn't get so far in my thinking. Amar Rabbi Chanan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Shlosha Nevi'im alui mahem min hagola. Okay, three Nevi'im came from the Galut. Who were they? The last three Nevi'im, Haggai, Malachi, and Zechariah. So now the question is what each of them, what their main purpose was, or what at least concerning when they went back from the Gola, how did these Nevi'im help them with issues relating to the Beit HaMikdash? Echad she'id lahem al mizbeach, ve'echad she'id lahem al makom mizbeach, ve'echad she'id lahem she'makrivim af al pi she'ein bayit. Okay, so the first one testified about the Mizbeach, which goes back to yesterday's daf about the size. Remember, the whole issue was could it be, right, what was the actual size? They have this whole thing we ended yesterday with. Shlomo didn't actually know the entire size. The assumption is that Shlomo made it smaller because he wasn't sure the exact place where the Mizbeach was supposed to be. And in the Bayit Sheni, they knew exactly where it was supposed to be, and therefore they could build it to bigger specifications. Shlomo didn't want to go like past the exact area where it was supposed to be, which is interesting because we struggled with where exactly the Mizbeach is supposed to be. You know, even Amoraim didn't really know. It's almost like they didn't know, then they found out, and then later on they didn't know anymore. So one testified about our issue, which is Makoma Mizbeach, where is the Mizbeach supposed to be? And which we just said, right, there were three options as to how they found out. So this is a sort of a fourth answer that the Navi told them. This is the Kedusha, this is what we talked about the other day, even though, right, Kedusha men, but Kedusha also Latid Lavo. In other words, once they had the first Beit HaMikdash, that place was designated as holy, and therefore one can sacrifice there. B'manita Tana. In a different, there's a different version that says Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer Shlosha Nevi'im Alu Imahem Min Hagola. Okay, same thing, but instead we're going to have four things. So two are going to have to be combined and said by one of the Nevi'im. Echad She'ilam Al Mizbeach VaAl Makom Mizbeach. So the first two get joined together. That was all said by one of them. Ve'echad She'ilam Shemakrivim Af Al Pi She'ein Bayit. Okay, that was the third one we saw. Ve'echad she'ilam, here's an interesting one, sounds out of left field, because the other ones all had to do with the Mizbeach and the Mikdash. Echad she'ilam ala Torah she'tikatev Ashurit. Okay, that the Torah should be written in the Ashurit font. Okay, this is really a font issue. There was Ketav Ivri and Ketav Ashuri. You can see it was in the Bible Lens Museum recently, you could see what Ketav Ivri is. It's something that you wouldn't really recognize as a font, right? You wouldn't know what the letters are. It's very different. And the Torah is written in Ketav Ashurit nowadays, right? That's the font that we use. There's a debate about whether Ashurit comes from the Assyrians, Ashur, or some people say it comes from Liot Meushar, and the, I forget how, one yeah. second, yeah.
I have a picture here.
Oh, you have a picture of the font? Okay. Yeah. The Ivri you're talking
Ivri
about.
Ivri says
yeah.
it's found on coins from the...
Wow.
You see Ivri and coins.
Yeah.
Different.
Some say it comes from Osher or Yosher, which indicates it was a beautiful script, okay? That it has to do with how pretty it is. And
it's not Assyrians?
There's a debate whether it comes from the Assyrians or whether it comes from the root
Ushar
or...
The shape of the letters, right.
A font is actually the shape of the letters, but because they have the same sounds, I assume the Ketav Ivri is different letter represent in a different
but it's still
Ashurim form.
Hebrew is still only Hebrew. No other language uses these letters for a different language.
Ah, that could be. That's true. That's why probably people don't think that the ones who say that it actually isn't the Assyrians. It's because, right, I don't know exactly who used these languages and if anyone actually at some point in the past maybe did use, maybe did. So anyway, obviously it was an issue what language, which font the Torah should be written in. And so one of the Nevi'im came and said it's going to be written in Ketav Ashurit. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, now we're on a different issue. Now we're going to get to things on the Mizbeach that are Ma'akev or are not Ma'akev. Okay, parts of the Mizbeach that are necessary. We're going to talk about all different parts. We're going to get to today the little ramps. Remember we discussed it wasn't so clear how they are set up and some other things. Okay. Karen, okay, you need to have, these are going to be the things that are Ma'akev. If you don't have them on the Mizbeach is no good. You need, obviously, the four kronot, the corners. Vikevet, right, the, I don't know what you call them. They're not exactly corners. They're in the corners, but they jut.
They say horns.
Horns, okay, right. Horns of the Mizbeach. The kevesh, the ramp, the yisod, that was the part that it's at the bottom where we pour the blood on, the where we pour the shirayim on, the ribua, it has to be square. This isn't a part, it's just that it has to be square. Ma'akvim, all those are ma'akev. Midat orko, midat rochbo, midat komato, but how wide, how long, and how high, ain ma'akvim. Okay, these things are not ma'akev. Where do we know this from? Amar Rav Huna, Amar Kra, Hamizbeach. Komakom shnei akra hamizbeach la'akev. The word hamizbeach appears with the four things mentioned, the keren, the kevesh, the yesod, and the ribua. So in all the psukim where it describes those parts, okay, I'll read Shmok Havzayin Aleph, Asita et hamizbeach, there you have hamizbeach, Atei shitim chamet amot orech, v'chamesh amot rochav, Ravua yiyeh hamizbeach. There you have it. It says Ravua right next to hamizbeach. Sorry, the hamizbeach in the beginning wasn't the relevant one. Next one, v'natata oto tachak karkov hamizbeach milamata, v'ita reshad ad chatzi hamizbeach. This is the karkov, which we're going to see there's a debate what exactly it is. Actually, that's not the one that I wanted. Sorry. It's interesting. They only bring one of them in the Torah Or. Anyway, there's four psukim by all of those things, the Keren, the Kevesh, the Yesod, and the Ribua, that all say the word Hamizbeach. Okay? So because of that, they say it's Ma'akev. So now they say, Elameata, you're going to say now that every time it says Hamizbeach, it's La'akev. So from here you can infer the kiyur le Rebbe, v'sovev le Rabbi Yossi v'Rabbi Yehuda, hachanami d'ma'akev, d'chtiv. Okay, so now we're going to talk about, let me read one more thing and then we'll go back. D'chtiv, v'natata ota tacha karkova mizbeach milamata. Okay, notice here, the important part for us right now is, karkov is mentioned right next to mizbeach. Okay, natata ota tacha karkova mizbeach limata. Karkov is with Hamizbeach. We just said a minute ago that since all those places say Hamizbeach, then it's Ma'akev, which means that the Karkov is Ma'akev. What exactly is the Karkov? There's a debate about it. Is it Kiyor? Now, Kiyor does not mean sink. Kiyor means embossments? Embossings? Embossings. There were these carved, okay, according to Rebbe, the karkov were these embossings that were on the sovev. Okay, they were, here, I'll show you a picture. There was a, there's a space, I'll show you where this was here. Here's a good picture. Okay, if you have the shanshtim, you have it, but I'll pass it around right now. Above the yesod, okay, there was a hole, like this, I'm sorry, above, not the yesod. Where the sovev is, okay, there's a whole level, like an amma wide space that's called the karkov. Okay, I'm going to pass it around. Okay, you have the picture. So that's the karkov. So it goes above the sovev, or by the sovev. And according to Rebbe, it had these images on it. Okay, pictures. According to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, it was just the sovev, and it was flat. There was nothing on it. Okay, that's what they say the karkov is. Okay, you can see it's really the sovev. The sovev is the karkov. The question is, and you can see because it says, you remember it's v'haita reshet al chatzi hamizbeach. Remember it's right above the reshet. You remember the reshet was where the chudas sikra was supposed to be. Right, which is five amot, and the sovev sits between the fifth and the sixth amma. So basically we're going to say right above that was what we call the karkov, and the karkov, either it was with images or it was without images. So either which way we're going to say, according to this, it should be ma'akev, because it says, v'natata oto tacha karkov mizbeach milamata. V'tanya, and here's a braita, ezu karkov, Rebbe omer zekior, Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda omer zah sovev. So, are you really going to say that that's Ma'akev? So they say, in fact, yes, it is Ma'akev. Ditanya. In other words, according to Rebbe, that would mean if it doesn't have images on it, then it's no good, which sounds a little crazy, right? But that's what he says. Ditanya, oto ayom nifgima kerem mizbeach ve'viu bul shamelach v'satmuhu v'lo mipnei shekasher lavada ela shelo yir'e mizbeach pagum. Shekom is beach she'ein lo keren v'kevesh v'yesov v'ribua pasul. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda omer af ha'sovev. Here we're going to see, okay, so again, I have to go back and explain this whole context, but the bottom line being here, before I explain everything that I just read, is that in the end of the day, we have a braita where Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, the sovev is ma'akev also. Okay, but let's try to understand what happened. Okay, what's Oto Ayom? Oto Ayom was, there was an instance with the Tzdukim. The Tzdukim didn't believe in the Nisachim, that they had to be poured, that they didn't believe in the Nisachim at all. So one day, one of the Tzdukim took the Nisachim from the Korban and he spilled it on the floor. okay? In an act of, you know, we've seen already act of these acts that went on of, you know, trying to prove who's right. So the people took etrogehem, okay, I guess it was Sukkot, and they had etrogim, and they took avanim, and they stoned him, okay? They threw it at him, okay? So they pelted him with etrogim and stones. So it says, from all the pelting, what happened? So now go back to the beginning. Oto yom nipgima keren mizbeach. Okay? So the keren was nipgam. Ve'viu bul shel melach b'satmuhu. They took some salt and they fixed it up using the salt. Ve'lo mipnei shekasher l'avodah. I'm just reading the whole thing again. Not because now it's fixed and you can actually do avodah on it. No. It really was no good anymore because it was messed up. Ela shelo yir'em mizbeach pagum. They just didn't want it to look. Right? They wanted to make it look nice. They didn't want it to make it look like the Mizbeach was didn't look nice. You know, it had this big hole, you know, or dent in the side. So they fixed up the dent for aesthetic purposes, but it wasn't going to work for Avoda. And how do we know this? Shekol Mizbeach, Shein Lo Keren V'Kevesh, V'Yisov Ribua Pasul. Okay, that was our point. And that was what, you know, the story. Then Rabbi Yosef, Yehuda adds, well, also the Sovev, by the way. Okay? And that proves our point that, yes, because it says Karkov, and Karkov is the Sovev, and it says Hamizbeach next to it, so it's also Malkev. What do you want to say?
That's what bothered them after they finished stoning somebody to death.
Yes.
If they stoned him to death, then all the Kohanim became
to make. So first of all, I'm not sure if they stoned him to death. Right. It's not clear he died. They just threw things at him. It could be they were just chasing him out of the Beit HaMikdash. It was a way to get him to leave. It's definitely not appropriate behavior. It's certainly not appropriate behavior in a holy place of, you know, right. I think, no, in fact, I think the story is trying to say, in other words, that they were oblivious to the fact that they were in this holy place, that all they saw was this guy who was doing something wrong, and that this is a good example of, I think the story is being critical of the people, because it's saying, here you see this, I'm glad you pointed it out, because it's good to think about the story, here you see this guy, and you're so crazy, he's doing something wrong, that he's pointing, you know, that he's spilling his chin on the floor, that, you know, in an act of holiness, you know, you think you're doing an act of holiness, and in the end, it hits you in the face because now you can't even do korbanot because you ruined the mizbeach. And even though you can fix it up, you can't exactly fix it up properly, and now you can't do the avoda. So sometimes you have to let small things go, you know, for the bigger picture. But again, you know, we all know that the machlokot between the Prushim and the Tzdukim were very intense and heated, and it's not the only story where they threw etrogim, right? We've seen other stories where they threw etrogim, and it's, interesting, right? It's a good example of, you know, you think about not having certain things around because kids might use them, you know, and do something bad with it. You know, you got to be careful of having etrogim in the Beit HaMikdash. It can be used as weapons.
Or stones, right.
I don't know exactly why they had all these stones around, though. Where were their stones from? I mean, they're stones that they use in the Mizbeach, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe they found stones outside, brought them in to do it.
It must have also been particularly upsetting that they poured it on the floor.
Yeah, no. I mean, look, you can imagine. No, but that's why I said it was for a good reason. Here, the Tzdukim were going against, they're showing you're doing the avoda wrong. You know, we have the right way to do it. And they felt very strongly, passionately, how could you do this in the Beit HaMikdash? But then they did something, right? They lost sight of the bigger picture, so. Yeah, I definitely think the story has a critical element of, you know, to what they did. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. Ezu Karkov. Now we're going to have a different version of what the Karkov is. So right now we think it's this part above, you know, by the Sovev, basically. It's the Sovev, and whether it was engraved or not. But here's a different opinion. Bein Karen LeKaren, Mekom Hiluch Raglea Kohanim Ama. Okay, this is a little bit hard to understand, but it sounds like what they're saying is, between each Karen on the Mizbeach, so now we're not at the middle part or right above the middle part of the Mizbeach, we're now at the top of the Mizbeach, in between the four horns of the Mizbeach, we have a place for the Kohanim to walk. It was an Amma, and it's called the Karkov. This is our first understanding of this. We're going to see it's understood a little differently. Rashi explains, even though it doesn't say this, and that's why I say it's a little hard to understand, because Rashi explains it, I would say he adds something more to the pshat, but maybe this is definitely the pshat, I don't know. But that if you're just saying it was that space, so either you just say this area of the Mizbeach is called the Karkov. Okay, so here's your Mizbeach. Here are your four krenot. I actually, in my mind, what did I think of? A baseball field, right? So you have in between the bases, imagine, is the Karkov, right? So the space in between, okay, where the Kohanim would walk, is in between the Kerkov. Now, we're going to have a bit of an issue in a minute because the Kohanim don't walk there because the Kranot are in the way. In other words, remember, the Kohanim have to walk in around the Mizbeach. So if they're walking around the Mizbeach, they actually have to walk a little bit further in. Okay, we had this whole thing about the Makom, Hiluk for Glad Kohanim, is the Amma in between the Kranot, right? An Amma going in from each Karen, that's the space. So there's a little bit, but right, they're going to change this in the Gemara, but they're going to say that. But right now, we're going to assume it's the space between Karen and the Karen. So what does Rashi add? Rashi adds that it was grooved, that they dug down a little bit. What was the reason? Think about it. Mizbeach is flat at the top. If the Kohanim are walking near the edge, they might fall. So they dug down a little bit, and that's called the Karkov, the area where they dug down in Amma's depth, not in Amma's depth, in Amma's width of space, dug down. Okay, in a minute we're going to see it was actually two Amma's, and that's how we're going to get to where the Kohanim walked. But right now we're going to assume it was an Amma's width, and it's dug in, basically, so that the Kohanim don't fall when they're walking.
It doesn't say anywhere that the Mizbeach has to be flat, that you're allowed to dig.
Right, so it's interesting. That's why I said, I don't know, and Rashi claims that Karkov means like a harif. That's what it means. I didn't look up the etymology of the word. But yeah, right.
But it's also maybe so things didn't pour off, because you would think, I mean, that's what you...
Right, it could be so nothing spills off, maybe. Yeah, could be. So now, the Gemara says now, Atu Kohanim be Karen leKaren avavazle, how could the Kohanim walk between the Kranot? Ela Ema umekom hiluch ragla Kohanim ama. And then Rashi explains that it was two amot, in fact. And as, again, you could explain this in two ways. If you could say the Karkov wasn't exactly between, it was exactly where the Makom Hiluch Raglei Kohanim is. Or you can say, I actually have three readings of this, okay? One is that you say, read the source again. The source says, Ezu Karkov ben Karen leKaren, Makom Hiluch Raglei Kohanim ama. In other words, the Karkov is the space between the Kranot, and then right next to it is this Amma of Makom Hiluch Raglei Kohanim, and they're two totally different things. Rashi explains that they're one and the same, and what it means is the ditch they dug was two Amma wide, and the inner Amma was the one that they would walk in. But then you have to wonder why they dig it in the other Amma, in the space between the Karen and the Karen, so it's a little difficult to understand. I was imagining yesterday when I was preparing that I actually know someone who built like the Kelim of the Mishkan, like a virtual reality kind of thing. Like, I think it would be brilliant if, maybe it exists, if you could build all of these Kelim, like an image that changed by opinion, you know, that you could, this must exist even. But you could see how there's so many, we're going to see a lot today, particularly about all different opinions about, like we saw again, where the Mizbeach stood, now we're going to see the dimensions, all different things that you could sort of change it, click, you know, and it would alter the image of, you know, what it looked like exactly. So anyway, anyone who has time on their hands and wants to start a project, it's a good one. I actually know a son of a good friend of mine. He, at some point in high school, he was using, what's it called? There's, what's that program? SketchUp. I think he used SketchUp, or one of these programs, and he built like all the Kalim, and I think maybe with the different opinions, like he built these images of like the exact dimensions of the Kalim of the Mishkan. So it's a good project. Okay. And by the way, it exists online. I don't remember where you can find it. It might actually be on the Ala Torah website. There's a great website called Ala Torah with great resources of Tanakh stuff, and I think it might sit on their site because the guy who runs it, it's his nephew. So anyway. Okay. Okay. V'haktiv tacha karkuvo milamata ad chetzio mizbeach. So doesn't it sound like, or ad chetzio, sorry, ad chetzio, the mizbeach is the other pasuk. But, right, he made this michbar maaseh reshet nechoshev. Remember, that was like the chut hasikra, that in the Mishkan it was this reshet, because it was made of nechoshev, so they could put it in the middle. Whereas once it was made of avanim, they couldn't do that. But they put the this reshet of Nechoshet, and then it said, Tacha Karkuvo Milamata Al Chetzio, was right under the Karkov. So how could you say that the Karkov is at the top of the Mizbeach when it sounds like the Karkov is near the middle of the Mizbeach, which would match the earlier opinions we saw. Hamarav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Trehavu Chad Lenoi VeChad LeKohanim. There were two Karkovim, start with the second one. One was at the top of the Mizbeach for the Kohanim, and the one in the middle was just for Noi. Okay, it was just for decorative purposes. And that matches also Rebbe, who says that there were images on it. Okay, Delo, oh, and Chal HaKohanim, by the way, so here they say Delo Nishtarku, so that they don't slip. Okay, so they don't slip on the edge and fall. Midat Orko, Umidat Rochbo, Midat Komato, Emakvin. So now we're going back to this line. The Orech, the Rochav, and the height don't aren't Makiv. Am Rabbi Meni, Ubevad, Shelo Yivchetenem, Mizbeach, Shasam Moshe. But it can't be any smaller than Moshe's Mizbeach. In other words, the dimensions don't have to be exact. There's not an exact formula for them. But they at least have to be as big as Moshe's Mizbeach was, which again, if you remember, we saw there were different opinions about how big Moshe's Mizbeach was. Right? Was it 5 by 5 by 3? Or was it 10 by 10 by no, 10 by 10 by 3 or 5 by 5 by 10? Right? 10 height. Amar Rav Yosef, Vikama, so how big was the Mizbeach of Moshe? Amar Rav Yosef, Amma. He said the Mizbeach of Moshe was an Amma. What do you mean it was an Amma? That wasn't one of our two choices, right? So what happens here? Rav Yosef says Amma. Now, if you remember Rav Yosef, what do you remember about him? He's blind, but later in life he starts forgetting a lot of things, and Abaye always reminds him of things he forgets, and he's a little forgetful. So he says, Amma, Mechaku Ale. Everyone starts laughing at him, which is really disrespectful. Right, very insensitive. They start laughing at him. And they say, Chamesh Amot Orech, Chamesh Amot Rochav, Ravu Yeh Mizbeach. How can you possibly say, right, even if you understand this, maybe 5 is 10, right, but you certainly aren't going to get to an Amma. Amar Le Abaye, Dil, so Abaye with his, you know, gentle way, Dilma Makom Arachaka Amar. Maybe he's talking about the space that there was where they put the fire on. You remember the etzim of the Maracha, which we learned already, was an Amma. How did we get to an Amma? Because if it's 5 by 5, you take away 2 Amot for the Kradot on both sides, then you take away 2 Amot for the Makumi Luch Raglei Kohanim, one on each side, and then you're left with an Amma of space in the middle. Okay, so maybe he meant the Maracha, Kamar. Amar Le, so Rabbi Yosef says to him, Mar de Gavra Rabahu Yada. Mar de Gavra Rabahu Yada Maika Amina. Right? Abaye is Mar, who's a Gavra Rabu, who's a great man, understood what I was talking about. Okay? Kare Alayhu, and then Rabbi Yosef goes back and insults the people, and he calls them B'nai Keturah. Okay, says you're the sons of Avraham, but you must be from the sons of his wife Keturah, right? Which was one of his pilakshot, or right? Was she actual wife? Maybe she was an actual wife after. Okay, but not obviously from Sarah. B'nei Achte de Rabbi Tarfon. Okay, now that we're talking about the B'nei Keturah, we're going to go off on another story about someone about the B'nei Keturah. Or actually, it's not about B'nei Keturah. It's just we'll see.
The Midrash that she's Hagar.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I don't know if that's it's certainly not the pshat. But anyway, it was an insult. B'nei Achte de Rabbi Tarfon, the nephews, the sons of Rabbi Tarfon's daughters, sisters, Havu Yatve Kameh de Rabbi Tarfon. They were sitting before Rabbi Tarfon. And according to Rashi, V'lo Hava Amru Midi, they were sitting very silently in Shiur and they were saying nothing. Okay, and he was feeling like, they're not paying attention to what I'm saying, and they're not being yanim, and they're not. So what did he do? He wanted to catch their attention. This is Rabbi Tarfon, who is a little bit famous for being, he's the guy who does like Beit Shammai with Kriyat Shema, and he lies on the floor, and they say, you should have died because you were misaken atzmecha mipnei alistim, that, you lie down in the middle of the street at night to say Kriyat Shema. It's a bit of a character. So, Patach Ba'amar, V'Yosef, Vayosef Abraham, Vayikach Ishma, Ushma Yochani. Okay, like made up a name. Okay, to kind of get their attention. Amule Ketorah Ktiv. They said, but her name was Ketorah. It's not, it's not that. It's not Yochani. Kare Alehem B'nei Ketorah. So then he insulted them and he called them B'nei Ketorah because what's he trying to say? All you know about is Ketorah, but you don't know anything about Halacha. Okay? He was saying, you know your Tanakh, but you don't know your Halacha. And he was obviously trying to insult them. And, again, we've seen before that rabbis sometimes use tactics of insult or being particularly gruff with the students to get them to be more up to par. Whether we agree with this or not is a separate question, but that's possibly what he was trying to do. Okay, back to our issue. Now we're going to talk. We talked about the Ma'aracha. What was the Ma'aracha made of? You know, they would put logs there. So what kind of logs? What were the size of the logs? Amar Abaye Bar Huna, Amar Avchama Bar Guria, Gzirin Shasa Moshe, or okay, these are the logs that Moshe made. And the assumption is that not just did Moshe make them, but those are the size of the logs we're supposed to use. Or kan amav ruchban amav ovyan kemachak godesh se'ah. Their length was an amma, their width was an amma, which makes sense because the Mizbeach of Moshe, again, according to the opinion, it was 5 by 5, that the space was exactly an amma. So the size of the logs he would use were an amma by an amma, and their thickness was the thickness of an implement that they would use, a wooden stick that they would use to flatten out when you were measuring things. Right? Imagine you measure flour. You know, I don't know if anyone does this, but you know, you're supposed to be very exact about it when you do a recipe, and you flatten it out at the top with a knife, let's say, okay, or some flat implement. So they would use, you know, to do this, you would use some thin implement. So the thickness of the wood was a thin, it wasn't very thick. It would be something that was thick enough to flatten it out, but usually what they used is a machak. Again, right, it sounds like an eraser. In other words, they're erasing the godesh se'ah. The godesh is the overflow. So they would be used to erase the overflow when they were doing the measurements. And that's how thick they were. Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Ba'ama Geduma. Okay, some people have a different nusach, but let's assume an Ama Geduma. What's an Ama Geduma? It means they were a little bit less than an Ama. They weren't a full Ama, because the concern was if they were full Ama, you know, and people weren't careful about the measurement, it would actually stick out. And what would happen if it stuck out? The Kohanim would have less space to walk. And as the Kohanim, as it is, only have an Ama to walk. So they said, make them a little smaller so that there'll be space for the Raglei Kohanim. Amar Rav Yosef, and here there's many different ways to interpret this. Some people think this is support. Some people think this is a question on Rabbi Yirmiya. The first opinion said they were an Amma, an Amma by an Amma. And the second opinion said, no, they were smaller than a regular Amma. So Amar Rav Yosef, the Lav Hainu Detanya, is not what it says in a Braita, which again, maybe is contradicting him or maybe is supporting him. Al ha'etzim asher al ha'esh asher al ha'mizbeach. Okay, so here the full pasuk is Varchu b'nei Aaron ha'kohanim et ha'netachim et ha'rosh et ha'pader ve'al ha'etzim. So they put the pieces of the animal that were supposed to be burned. Al ha'etzim asher al ha'esh asher al ha'mizbeach. Right, so why do they have to say all those words? Shelo yehu etzim yosim en ha'mizbeach klum. So that they wanted to make sure, and the reason to say all these words is to say with the Eitzim and the Mizbeach, the Eitzim shouldn't be Yotzim and the Mizbeach Klum, meaning from the space of the Ma'aracha. Obviously, they weren't anyway going to get off the Mizbeach, but they mean from the space of the Ma'aracha, which either means that an Amma by an Amma is fine, and that as long as they don't go out of Amma, or maybe it means, no, they were smaller in order to make sure that they didn't go out. So it's unclear which there's different interpretations that say, you know, either way. Tnan Hatam. Kevesh haya l'dromasha mizbeach. Okay, now we're going to talk about the big ramp. The ramp was on the south side of the mizbeach. So until now we've talked about where the mizbeach is. Okay, the question now is, which side of the mizbeach is the ramp on? Does it jut out to the northern side or does it jut out to the southern side? Okay, where would the kevesh go? So we're now going to see. Kevesh haya l'dromasha mizbeach. Orech 32 al rochav 16. It was 32 amot long, 16 amot wide. Minane milei. Where do we get this from? Amar Rav Huna, Amar Kra. B'shachat oto al yerech. So now, okay, sorry. I just want to. It was on the darom side of the mizbeach. I didn't stress that, right? So it's on the southern side of the mizbeach. And now the minane milei is on that question. How do we know that it goes on the southern side and not on the northern side of the mizbeach? So Rav Huna says, the pasuk says, "V'shachat oto al yerech hamizbeach tzafona," which means right at the foot of the mizbeach tzafona. So what do they say here? She'e yerech b'tzafon upanav b'darom. If you're supposed to do it right, look at the mizbeach. The mizbeach, right, wherever it's going to be, okay. Well, unless the whole thing was in the tzafon, but even if the whole thing is in the tzafon, still you're going to have the space to the north of it is where they're going to do the shechita. So if the space to the north is called the Yerech, and the space, the Kevesh, is going to be, right, we're going to say that the Panav is going to be on the other side. Okay? So the Kevesh is going to be on the Darom side. Because that makes sense. If you're Yerach is B'Tzafon, then you're Panav or B'Darom. So they say, why are you assuming that? Ema, Yerach B'Tzafon, U'Panav B'Tzafon. What they're imagining here is an image of a person. If a person is lying down, so you're, or, you know, even, I guess, lying down, then your legs are going to be one way and your head's going to be on the other side, right? So that's the way they view the Kevesh and the Mizbeach, right? That the Yerech of the Mizbeach is going to be on one side. So the Kevesh, which is going to be the head of the Mizbeach, like the entrance, is going to be on the other side. But now they say, if you're sitting up, so then your legs and your face are both facing the same direction. So in theory, you could say the Mizbeach is like that. Both the foot of it and the head of it could be like a sitting object, like a sitting person. It's interesting that they're comparing this to an image of a person.
Didn't we have so many, it says you have to slaughter in the north?
Yeah. No, the question is, why is the Kevesh on the southern side? The Kevesh could be on the northern side also.
There'd be no room. It's huge.
Right. It's true. Would definitely be a... If, well, remember, we don't paskin that the Kevesh is in... That the Mizbech is in the north, right? We hold that it was... more to the south side, maybe a little into the north. But we don't hold that the Mizbeach is in the north. So it's true that this would be difficult. If you put the Mizbeach in the north, and the Kevesh is going in the north, and the whole, you're not going to have any space to do the Shechita. Again, you could say you could do the Shechita on the side, but you're not leaving a lot of room. Okay? But that would only be according to that opinion, which, even if you're a member, no one actually explicitly said that the Mizbeach is in the north. We only inferred it from all different places. There was no actual opinion where somebody said the Mizbeach is kulo b'tzafon. It was all, oh, maybe it's him, and maybe you can infer from this mission that that's what he held.
Not even the Mizbeach, but even as it is, if you just split the Kevesh...
You're going to limit your space, yes. You're going to definitely limit your space. Anyway, right now, they're just raising Hava Aminas. Nobody... It's just hypothetical. They're trying to say, why isn't it that way? So, Shari, what you're saying is, they should have just simply said there would be no space. But instead, they like to use psukim because that's their way of learning things. So, Amarava, Rame Gavra A'ape. He says, why say, Yerech B'Tzafon, Upanav B'Tzafon, that the guy is sitting up? You should do it like an image of a guy lying down. So, Amarle Abaye, that's not an answer. You're just saying that's how it should be, but you're not explaining why it should be. So, Abaye says, Adrabah, you could say the opposite. Taritz v'otiv gavra. You could sit the guy up. In other words, what makes you say it's like a guy lying down and not like a guy sitting up? So, Amarle, here's a better proof. Ravuaktiv. It says it should be Ravua. So, Ravua, they understand, is Ravuts. What's Ravuts? Ravuts means crouching. So crouching is like lying down, even though it's not exactly. But they say ravua is like ravutz. By the way, in Hebrew, there's a lot of similarities between words that have the first two letters. Like you might think, how could you get from ravua to ravutz? But there's a lot of words like peresh, okay? Parash, parak, pered. They're all words that mean splitting, cutting. There were these two, originally there were two letter roots. And the third letter kind of got added on. So to say Ravua and Ravutz are the same thing is not so crazy. Okay? So they said, so then they say, what do you mean? Bahamibaile demirba. You need Ravua to tell you that the Mizbeach has to be square. You can't use it to say, oh, it's Ravutz. That means it has to be with, you know, the Yerach on one side and the head on the other side. So they say, Ravua miktiv. Demirba Ravue, it has to be square. So now they say Miktiv Miruba. It doesn't say Miruba, it says Ravua. So Ravua can give us two indications. If it said Miruba, we would know it was square. It says Ravua, we could say it means both, right? The fact that they use this word to say that could also mean Ravutz. Bilitameh, but according to you, Miktiv Ravutz. But it doesn't say Ravutz actually, it says Ravua. Amarle, Ravua Ktiv. So they say, no, it says Ravua, which could mean both. Okay, so that's one reason how we get it. Okay, now we're going to have a different reason. So either we say that Ravua means it's like a person who's Ravutz, and therefore the Yerech is on one side, and the head is on the other. Okay, and that's why the Kevesh is Bidon. Now we're going to have a different reason. V'tana maitela mehacha. Different Tana brought it from a different source. D'tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, u'ma'alotayu pinot kadim. And his steps would go to the east. Okay, so now, what does that mean? When the Kohen goes up the ramp, he goes to the east. Now, if you remember, although we're going to say that it didn't say this yet, but that all pniotav go yamina. Mm-hmm. So if he goes up the ramp, okay, here, go on your map. He goes up the ramp and he goes yamina, he's going to be a mizrach. If he goes up the ramp and the ramp is on the Tzafon side, he's going to end up in Ma'arav if he goes in Yimin. But right now they're just saying Punot Kadim. It has to face, right? His steps have to face the east when he gets up there. So, and then they say, Kopniot Shata Poner Lo Yehu Ela Derech Yimin Lamizrach. So now they say, from that pasuk, you don't really get that it has to be Yimin. If it aim a small Lamizrach, you could say, maybe you have to go to the Mizrach, but turn left, not turn right. Now we're going to derive how we know that all the pinot have to be derech yimin. In other words, the pasuk proved you have to go to the east when you get there, and therefore it makes sense that they went up the south side because they turn right. But we still didn't explain how you know they turn right. So now they're going to prove it from this yam shasa shlomo. This was a big basin that the shlomo made. We've talked about it before. Omed al shnemasar bakar. Okay, it would stand, the basin stood on these 12 bakar, which means there were these 12 images of animals. Okay, and now we're going to see shlosha ponim tzafona, v'shlosha ponim yama, v'shlosha ponim negva, v'shlosha ponim mizracha. Okay, each one is facing a different direction. What do you derive from here? Now, go in the direction. Tzafona, yama, negva, mizracha. Okay, that's going to the right. And because it says the word, okay, they say, "Kol pinot shataponeh lo yehu ela derech yimin lamizrach." So now they're saying, okay, here you see, since the direction they describe the animals goes from, you know, goes yimin every time, therefore it must be. So they say, what do you mean? Hahu ba'alei legufa? No, you needed to describe that pasuk to just tell us. There were three facing this way, there were three facing this way. How else are you going to say it? Im ken ponim ponim lamali. They say, no. But the extra word ponim here, it didn't need to say ponim in every case. It could have just said shlosha ponim tzafona, ushlosha yama, ushlosha negva, ushlosha. The fact that it says ponim each time teaches you that every time you turn has to be yamin. And by the way, they quote this for other halachot as well, not just in the Beit HaMikdash, but there's some other halachot where you start on the right. Sha'al Rabbi Shimon ben Yasi ben Lukinya et Rabbi Yossi. Omer haya Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, avir yesh ben kevesh lemizbech. So he says, Rav Shimon bar Yochai said that there was space between the kevesh to the mizbech. Okay, we assume the kevesh went right up to the mizbech. Now we're going to learn that there was a space in between. Amar lo va'ata iata omer ken, va'lo kvar ne'amar. So we start with, sorry, I didn't say this well, Sha'al Rav Shimon ben Yossi ben Lekunya et Rabbi Yossi. And he asked him, Rav Shimon bar Yochai used to say, Abir yesh ben kevesh to the mizbech, what's the deal? So Amar lo v'ata yata omer ken, you don't think so? V'lo kvar ne'amar, v'asita olotecha habasar v'hadam. It connects in this pasuk for the korban olah. So some debate, maybe this is only true for the korban olah. Others say, no, it's true for all korbanot. It says, you do your olot habasar v'hadam. So they're going to make a hekesh between the basar and the dam. Ma dam bizrika. How did they throw the blood? They threw it onto the mizbech, okay? Af basar bizrika. I showed you once the other day. You can look in that book in the Atlas, there's a picture of them throwing, they stood at the top of the ramp and they threw the pieces onto the mizbech. So, what is he assuming? If you have to throw them, then it must be that the pasuk is telling you there has to be a space. What's the purpose of the space? To teach you, don't go all the way. As soon as you see that space, that reminds you, oh wait, I'm not supposed to walk all the way up to the mizbech and throw it and put it on. I'm supposed to throw it from here. So that they designed it with this space in between the ramp and the mizbech so that you would remember that you have to throw it. Amar lo, shani omer, omer b'tzad marcha v'zorek. He's saying, no, you could say that that's just teaching you that you have to stand near the marcha and throw it, not necessarily that you have to throw it from the kevesh and that you have to have the space between the kevesh and the mizbech. Amar le, kishu zorek lamaracha dluka hu zorek, o lamaracha she'en dluka hu zorek. Heve omer, right? And that's, okay, let's be real. When you're throwing these on, are you throwing it onto a fire or are you throwing it onto no fire? Of course you're throwing it onto a fire. You're going to burn them. Heve omer lamaracha dluka hu zorek. So what do they say? Therefore, it must be, of course you're going to throw them. Of course you're not going to go right up to the maracha. You're going to burn yourself. So of course you're going to throw them. So why does the pasuk have to tell you that you have to throw them? To teach you that, right, hata mishum de lo efshar. In other words, right, I think that line is coming to say, the point is that it's clear, you wouldn't need a pasuk to tell you that. It's obvious you have to throw them on. If you place it on, you'll burn yourself. So therefore, it's obvious that the pasuk is telling you that in order to teach you that you have to leave this space between the ramp and the mizbeach. And right, hatam mishum de lo efshar, because you can't do it if you're standing right next to it. So obviously, you have to stand on the ramp, and therefore, the only reason you would need this hakesh is to teach you that there has to be this space. Okay, we're going to end with Rav Papa, who gives another reason for the space. Rav Papa amar ki dam, ma dam, avir karka mafsiko. Just like when you sprinkle the blood, when you throw the blood on the mizbeach, we also saw this in a picture in that book, that they stood not on the mizbeach, but they stood away from the mizbeach and threw it. So also here, right, avir karka mafsiko, there's space on the ground that separates between him and the wall of the mizbeach. So, af basar avir karka mafsiko. There has to be ground space that separates you from the mizbeach when you're throwing it, and therefore the kevesh had to be with a little bit of space in between. There's a debate about whether it's a teeny space or it's actually a significant space. Okay? Nobody really knows. This is why I said it would be interesting to see, you know, different images of what it could possibly look like, because it's not 100% clear. Tomorrow, we're actually going to talk about the little ramps that come off of it, and then all of a sudden, it's a little unclear, because there it seems to indicate that maybe there isn't really a space, so we'll have to figure it out.